This is gonna hurt. It's time for the Suffering Podcast.
Life is all about choices. Sometimes those presented choices are clear-cut and easy. Others arrive with no clear beneficial avenue, leaving you wondering which one will be correct. Each person's decision-making process is unique. A multitude of factors will influence whether you go right or left. Ultimately, it's your choice whether you stay on the highway or take the back roads. The choices you make in the moment can define the rest of your life. Existing with regret or second-guessing is a path to misery. Even the most well-thought-out plan that seems to be the best at the time can leave you with doubt. I'm Kevin Donaldson, here with Mike Falaise, and welcome to the Suffering Podcast. If you're a fan of overcoming adversity and overcoming suffering, then we're for you, because that's what we do here, and that's the stories that we highlight. So do me a favor, hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, please comment, ring the bell so you can get notified of all of our new content, and now you can join. Follow us on all social media so you can find out exactly what we're up to. On tonight's episode of the Suffering Podcast, we got two very special people here. We want to welcome Matt Isler to talk...
Real special.
to talk about the suffering of resignations with special guest host, the Hurricane himself. Welcome back, Mike DePalma.
It's great
for
to
the 15th time.
This is not about me. This is...
What are we, about 170 episodes in? Mike's been on 100 of them.
I'm off the hook, but I keep on doing the same stuff.
He's the John Madden of the Suffering Podcast, his color commentary.
Well, you know, when a guest come in here, they feel bad about themselves sometimes, you know? So they have Mike here, so they say, at least I'm not as bad as him.
I didn't do what he did.
Before we get into anything, let's throw a big shout out to our marquee sponsor. That's Toyota of Hackensack. We don't trust anybody as police, but we do trust Toyota of Hackensack. Go to toyotahackensack.com. Let them find you a car. So, Matt, each week we take a question from our audience. This question comes from JC27 Finkel. I think that's Ray's brother.
Could be it, Ray Finkel.
Yeah, Ray Finkel.
Laces out.
Laces out.
Finkel. Great Einhorn. Movie.
Finkel. Einhorn.
Einhorn Finkel.
How do you deal with an abuse of power? We all have bosses in our lives. I don't think anybody here, well, Mike is now a boss, so fuck you.
It's not really
boss. But we've all had those bosses that sort of overstep their bounds. They take their power a little too seriously. Sometimes the power goes to their head. And over time, we deal with them differently. So how do you deal with an abuse of power?
In my experience, I would just step back and maybe wait for a private moment to have a discussion with a supervisor. There's plenty of instances in my career where, you know, a sergeant had to pull me aside and have a conversation. And
well, that's a good boss. So that's a boss that is using his power in the proper way.
Right.
But you've had other bosses, not even in your police career, but also in your private life.
Sure.
That have just, you know, get off on it.
Sure. I worked at a swim club. I was a lifeguard as a teenager. And a person was upset that I wasn't blowing the whistle and taking charge. And it's just, what are you going to do? You know, you just kind of eventually I resigned that position. But, you know, you just kind of you roll with it. And you can't really – I feel like the more you push abuse of power, the more you're going to get it. So you kind of just got to step back and roll with the punches. That's it.
Nothing's probably worse than his boss now.
Yeah.
But anyway, go ahead, Mike.
And speaking of bosses,
I'm not.
So, Mike, we all know the way that you used to deal with the abuse of power.
Wait, well, this is outside of my former job.
Well, it could be your former job as well, but you've learned some stuff. So you're a little further along down the journey. You deal with an abuse of power a little bit differently now.
Now I do. I definitely know the consequences. I agree with Matt. I mean, now you just have to step back and, you know, think about things, take some deep breaths, and then go back with an answer. But, you know, prior to that, obviously, I mean, the Mickey Mouse is right there. And, you know, it's something I did. You know, this is, you know, in the legal battle I was in, it was a very abusive lawyer in so many different ways. And, you know.
But you're a boss now. So has that had any effect on the way you deal with your employees now?
No, I mean, I was a commander in the Army, so I kind of have that experience. You know, I wasn't, you know, a boss as in, you know, PD. It's just a little different. You just go with them. You have to know I always say you have to know your soldiers. You have to know the people around you. You have to know about them. You don't need to micromanage people or anything like that. You just hey,
it never works.
No, it just doesn't. And these are grown men.
Yeah. Well,
you know, and grown men with hundreds of years of experience, you know. So, you know, you got to just, you know, go with the flow. And honestly, it's not even being a boss. These guys that work, we all work together. And it's, and that's just a blessing.
Right.
You don't get many, many people like that nowadays. It's a blessing.
Mike, what do you think? You were a boss, but there were times when you weren't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, before my law enforcement career, when I was working in construction, we used to handle it differently.
Yeah.
You know, you get an overbearing boss, you're out in the parking lot after work.
And in the military, too, it's, you know, frag his ass.
But, you know, I mean, you get an overbearing boss in law enforcement, it's a touchy subject because you really don't want to go rat your, you know, if your sergeant's overbearing, you don't want to go over his head and tell the lieutenant everything. You really just have to let cooler heads prevail. And like you said, maybe take him on the side one day and say, you know, I've done it before. You know, I didn't appreciate the way you yelled at me, you know, especially when you're on a call.
That's a good thing. You try to handle it like an adult.
It doesn't work.
Sometimes.
You know, when you're on a call and one of your supervisor berates you in front of.
Yeah.
That method doesn't work.
That doesn't work at all.
So, you know, I've always been a believer that if you treat people like children, they're going to act like children. If you treat them like adults, they're going to act like adults. It doesn't always work, but I think by far and large, that is the way to go. So you see this in every facet of life. I know you have experience. The big thing you see it in is like HOA organizations.
Yeah.
They get the power, and all of a sudden, or what they perceive as power, and all of a sudden, they just think that they're king big shit. And it never works because they become resented. So early on in my career, having that same mindset, if you treat me like a child, I'm going to act like a child type of thing. I used to fire back because I'm a chess player. So I always say play chess, not checkers. I used to think three or four moves ahead and I'd sit there and wait and wait and wait and I'd strike at the right time. Mind you, I never got promoted. There's a reason why I never got promoted because I was constantly fighting administration. I was constantly fighting overbearing bosses. Every time I could stick a needle in, I would stick a needle in. Now, I think three or four moves ahead until I trap them into going exactly where I want them to go. I lead them in a path exactly where I want them to go. Because it just happened in my job right now where something happened. I didn't like it. I did it in a way where there wasn't anything that they could do. They just had to eat it. Now, I know if you go up against a overbearing boss, you better be better than everybody else. You can't be as good as everybody else. You better be better than everybody else because the first time you step on your dick, you're done. You know it. Like, you know that going in. But again, law enforcement, that's a little different. You know, law enforcement, I believe we took a job that we're supposed to protect people who can't protect themselves, yet we're horrible at protecting our fellow officers. Mm-hmm. Certain people in the PD will have information that could bolster your case and prove what you're trying to say, but they won't say anything because they're afraid of blowback. And I think that's horrible.
You know what happened with me, though? I was in the Detective Bureau for 10 years. And you know, law enforcement changes on a daily basis. You know, I wasn't in patrol for those 10 years and everything changed. So when I got promoted to sergeant, I got put back in patrol. I grabbed my whole squad, took them out one night. I said, listen, I need you guys more than you need me.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have to teach me what's going on now. You know, and I always said, the best part about being a supervisor, be one of the guys. Yeah. Don't, you know, if you didn't see the sergeant stripes on my sleeves, you would have never known I was a sergeant. I'm a get dirty guy. I'm not, you go do this, you go do that. I said, let's go do this.
That's very effective. That's even in the military. Well, that's
inspiring. Do what they do. That's inspiring because what you want to do with the people underneath you is inspire them. You want them to want to work for you because they don't want to let you down. I had a boss. I was very fortunate to have a boss like that. He wasn't very well liked by administration either. But I didn't – whatever I did out on the street while he was my boss, I made sure to do it to the best of my ability, extra, 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 because I wanted to make him shine. I wanted to make him look good. That's a boss. A boss is not do this. Yeah. Hey, rookie, go do this.
You go do that.
But, you know, it was also different back when, you know, we came on. You know what I mean? The old timers, if they said something and you went against them, you know, you'd be standing on, like, the corner for 8 hours on a sewer plate and not moving. You know, and you really didn't say anything. You know, that's the truth, you know?
It's like if you stole ammunition from the academy or something like that. You know,
Yeah, but they applaud that in certain departments.
Check, please.
So, JC27 Finkel, thank you so much for sending in your questions. Keep sending them in, and we will try to get them on the air. I want everybody to go to 234 Franklin Avenue in Nutley and go visit Gus at Cubita Cafe. I was just there. It is the most fantastic, well-prepared food in the world. And, you know, there's a judge. There's a judge when you go into a place. Go in a bathroom. If the bathroom's disgusting, I will walk right out. His bathroom is immaculate. As a matter of fact, I ate my food in the bathroom.
I was just going to say, Kevin took the food right on the toilet seat.
I wasn't going to let anybody steal. The food's so damn good that I don't want anybody to steal my stuff.
And you say, I did some odd stuff.
Come on. But this is top-notch. He's a top-notch chef. It is out-of-this-world food. And guess what? Even though it tastes good, he cooks very healthy. And there's a couple things, there's a couple reasons why he cooks very healthy, because he's very health conscious, but it's delicious. So go to Cubita Cafe, 234 Franklin Avenue in Nutley, and let Gus take
tell
care
him the suffering
of you.
Podcast, aren't you?
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Matt, we've been talking back and forth. I know your story, and you know, beyond what you told me, of course, you know, I have to look everybody up and vet everybody, and I got my source, my Wikipedia, my Depalmapedia over here.
That's my Wikipedia.
Yeah. Depalmapedia.
Instead of Siri, hey, Kevin, what's the weather today?
We got a resident phlebotomist.
Yes, yes. Oh, by the way, before we get any, I'm sorry to do this.
No problem.
Mike had a phlebotomy moment the other day. What did I say? Undulation.
Undulation.
I said, yeah, it's right in the dictionary next to phlebotomist.
I got to start taking track of all these words.
Yeah. I couldn't even spell
in it. In a sense, it's no meaning to it. Just going to say, what's up? Like, hey, that was great.
Yeah, I had one of those when I was a kid, undulation. So, Matt, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Lower Bergen County, Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey.
Are you the rich section of Bergen County or
no,
the
no, no, I'm in the
south of Route 4. That's
LBC, Lower Bergen County. Lower Bergen County. You know, like that. I mean,
he's more upper than I am, but
I was fortunate enough to have a loving family growing up, you know, playing sports, having fun.
What was your sport of choice?
Everything, like soccer. I ended up playing football.
Nick Del Calzo.
Skateboarding, rollerblading, like all that stuff, like in Hasbrook Heights. And it was just a great town to grow up in. It was a lot of fun. And, so I ended up, playing football, went to, born and raised, I went to Catholic school.
I
went to Bergen Catholic.
Oh, very
class
nice.
Of 98. Very and, nice. Yeah, three-time defending state champ.
I'm a Seton Hall prep guy.
I'm sorry.
I don't even know why we let this guy
in. You know, it's kind of amazing. But, like, I'm getting to know him. Like, I worked with him for years.
I was a scout
cool.
team. I was a scout team hero.
Yeah.
I mean, it was phenomenal. I grew up a Giants fan.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. But, you know, a couple of guys on those teams, Ben Martin and Jim Burt,
yeah.
Played with their sons. And my junior high school, 96, 97, we won the state championship. It was a blast, you know.
In Giant Stadium?
In Giant Stadium against St. Peter's Prep. Yeah. You know.
How was that game?
Wait, you played on it?
I was on that squad. Yeah, that year.
Oh,
I mean,
that's
I didn't
kind
get
of awesome.
I was on the bench, and my buddy Alex, who grew up as neighbors, he was a great football player. He scored a couple touchdowns that game, going to Georgetown, and it was phenomenal, you know. And
well, it's interesting. So you said it twice where you sat on the bench. So there's a lot of people who will go to a public school or something because they want to be great amongst the mediocre, where it seems like you went the other way, where you were on a top-notch football team.
Listen, I was.
It's competitive. Even on the bench, your bench players are better than most high schools.
I played plenty of JV. You know, I was a scout team hero. it was a lot of fun.
That's not wrong.
My sophomore year, I tore my lateral meniscus, lost that whole season. And that junior year, we won the state title, and that was fun.
So what years are we talking about?
I graduated in 98, so my junior year is when we won that championship.
So that would make you 57?
44.
Okay.
I'll be 44.
That's close.
Next.
That's close.
And,
Kevin, you don't bring anybody in here older than 57.
Fuck no. Fuck no. So, Bob Gibson was the only one I brought in here.
I
went to high school with Bob.
Yeah, he fought in World War II.
So it was interesting because when I tried out for that team, they didn't have enough jerseys for the guys. I mean, they had to make cuts, and at Hasbrook Heights, I never played running back. I was flying. They made me running back my sophomore year, busting my knee. Junior, we win. So senior year, you know, I had just coming off great summer, played lacrosse and everything. I got a really bad concussion. I was doing a string out drill with my buddy, running back, and you've played, you guys, I mean, you've played the most football here. I mean, you've gotten, you get lit up.
Oh, yeah.
I did a strung out drill, bang, lights, like, lit up, and it's like, at that time, yes, great, thanks, Isler, thanks for doing that drill for me, cool. And unfortunately for me, it was almost like my lights turned off.
Yeah.
I fell into a depression. I missed some of my senior year, but it was great because, I mean, I met a therapist who I've seen throughout the course of my life, and we have reconnected throughout the years. And
it wasn't Stephanie Samuels, was it?
No. It was someone else. And it helped me, you know. I mean, looking back like that, I understand now what happened to me, but back then, they had no fucking idea what concussions were and what the fuck.
My junior year, I missed 4 games with post-concussion syndrome. They had no idea what it was. No idea. Doctors would never clear me to get back in.
It's Matt, it's very impactful in your life.
Obviously, I know what you've been through, Mike, and yeah, it's
not just me. I mean, even football players, there's so much that we learned in the past.
So you know, I lost some of my time. some time.
That's a concussion. Don't worry about it.
It helped me, you know. I mean, I think with the anxiety of like, oh shit, you know, what am I going to do next with my life and college and what the fuck? And
Did you get it? Did you go on?
Yeah, I graduated. Yeah, I missed some time. You know, grade school. They worked with a home tutor. I was able to get back in class and school and graduate. You know,
Well, what aside from your therapist was what brought you out of that depression after the concussion?
Just because I had a great life. You know, I had a loving family. You know, friends who, at the time, didn't understand what I was going through. They're like, "The fuck's this guy's problem?" You know, like no one knew back then. I mean, it's just. I was out to lunch, you know, and slowly over time, you know, I got back on my feet. I was relatively smart. You know, I grew up watching X-Files as an 8-year-old shitting myself. And I never had.
You're shitting yourself at 8 years old.
No, in 8th grade. Like, maybe
that's
like.
Pretty good.
I'm good for twice a month, so don't worry about it.
I don't need to watch anything.
So back then, I'm like, yeah, that'd be cool, you know, FBI agent, but. Never really had the grades for that. My father.
We just had an FBI agent in here, and they are a different breed of individual.
They are.
They are like just brainiacs.
Absolutely. I was going to say, it's like they talk up here.
Right. Yeah. They have a different understanding of the world of investigation. They're just different. I've met a couple of them.
And listen, I was using this term with Mike the other day. I wasn't a blue blood. You know, I'd never had any family in law enforcement. My uncle. Still an EMT. He's a dispatcher for state police. He's getting towards the end of his career. And, you know, my cousin, on the other hand, he, even as a kid, we'd be playing and he would just be like, you know what? I want to work at the White House. I want to be Secret Service. And sure enough, he is. You know, he joined the Marine Corps, loves dogs, did the canine there. And that's what he's currently doing today. And,
after Bergen Catholic, did you go to college?
Yeah, I went to, got into Northeastern as an engineering student, lasted 1 year. You know, I was coming out of my depression. I was starting to feel better about myself. All right, good luck. Go to college. I'm a punk kid. Like I was on my own for the first time, you know, lived off Lansdowne Street, big baseball fan, Fenway Park's there. It was back then, it was before they became who they were today. I mean, they were just the losers back then. This was 99. I was able to go on a rainy day, get a ticket to the ball game, and see them play at the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. And
still had John Valentin on the team.
Yeah, Noma.
Well, we had John in here. That's why I say we had John. We had John in here. That's why I say his name.
So I didn't last long. I flunked out. I was like a 0 point whatever and
0.0.
Yes, zero.
Tarski, you have no great point average.
And you know, thankfully, loving parents took me back and. You know, I found my way at Montclair State University and
still a great school.
Amazing. It's and one of my interests, like I said, was, you know, music and actually radio. They have a great college radio station. They still to this day. And I was just a punk kid, like figuring myself out, you know.
You know, the funny thing, I went to FDU and they had a radio station. And the only reason I worked the radio station is so I could hawk CDs. Like, I stole every CD that I ever touched.
Give Mike any ideas.
No, why don't you say something about that?
I'm telling you right now, I stole every CD that came across my hands.
Well, for me, it was like my fraternity. You know, like, I met people with similar music interests, going to concerts and things of that nature. And it was great. And, you know, even up until that point, you know, never really thought about law enforcement. And then, 9/11 happened on a morning where it was one of my worst classes. It was some literature class early in the morning on a Tuesday.
Major. Yeah.
I'm sorry. You're very, I could see that.
Why? Because I'm a nerd?
Offense. No offense.
He's a hidden nerd.
You said it, not me.
No, don't worry about it. I am a nerd. It's okay. It's all right. I've accepted it.
So this professor comes in nonchalantly. You know, I'd gotten there early. It was early in the semester. I'm sitting there. Okay. I'm going to make it through this tough class. Not one of my favorites, and comes in nonchalant. Hey, heard something hit the World Trade Center. Let's go take a look. We could see the clouds. You know, it was a beautiful day. You saw it, the smoke. And I'm just like, an accident happened.
That we all thought.
And went through her class, you know, and then went on campus and then, you know, heard relatively what happened. And over time, like shortly thereafter, I started thinking to myself, you know what? That's something that I would want to get involved in, you know, and.
Well, do you think military or police?
Police.
Police, yeah.
Yeah. I started thinking about it, taking exams as I started finishing my career, my college career. I graduated and I got a late start in the game. I think I started taking my test at 22. 23. I mean, that's typically
that's pretty good.
It's average.
Turned 30 in the academy.
I turned 33. I was 33 in the academy.
I think the average hiring of a cop is somewhere between 25 and 27.
Yeah, I was 25.
Yeah, I was 26. So I mean, you're right in the wheels.
Yeah, right. I remember 35. They cut it off, and I had one.
Well, that's for pension purposes.
Yeah,
yeah. And I had one test left, and you know. I took everything, and I'll never forget one of my first interviews in my hometown. You know, it's a chief's test. You're sitting at a table like this, and you know, I'd already taken the physical aspect of it and passed the written, and I'm sitting at a table like this, and there's a captain. No, there's two retired chiefs and the captain sitting there watching you go back and forth. The questions are over in like 10 minutes. And it was just basic, you know, it's like, oh, you're currently working here. I'm kind of moving around here. But at the time, after college, I got a job through a family friend. I did it for 7 years. I worked in publishing. I was a developmental editor, did a little bit of that work in the city. So anyway, going back to this interview.
But he hated his literature class.
Right. Yeah, right. That's theoretically, yeah.
It's like, I hate manually masturbating animals, so I wasn't going to be a veterinarian, even though I applied for a couple.
Sorry. It's all right. Let's get back on track here.
Yeah. So I'm sitting there in the interview and, you know, the question came about, you know, you ever use marijuana? And this is an honest answer. You know, I did when I was in high school, didn't like it. And I always knew I wanted a career, eventually wanted a career in law enforcement. And I don't do it anymore. And the whole time this captain, he's probably the chief now, just sitting there tapping his pen, just staring at me, like basically like, get out.
Well, did you get asked that question when you were interviewed? Did you ever use marijuana?
Oh, I don't even think so.
Were you?
I don't think they asked if specifically marijuana. Did you ever use any illegal drugs?
You're talking about the
No, really? Just the interview process. Because they asked me that, and my answer was like this. I was a kid once.
In my psych exam, they asked, I remember they make you fill out all these like hundreds of multiple choice questions and stuff. Mm. And one that popped on my test was that, yes, I can sit and drink a six pack of beer. So the psychologist asked me, hey, you know, what's up with that? All right, if I'm at an all day barbecue, it's the 4th of July, I'm not driving anywhere. Yeah, I can have a six pack, you know, once in a blue moon. I'm not an alcoholic. I've never had any vices as far as drugs or alcohol. I mean, sure, I'll have occasional glass of wine, beer, or anything like that. But
I always like the you're talking about the MMPI. I always like the question is like, would you rather read a book or look at porn?
Yeah, those questions. Yeah. Right, that's all. the ones, hey, do you feel like ripping your hair out? Yeah, I want to. This is fucking 375 questions. I feel like ripping the guy next to me his hair out too.
Oh, by the way, I've taken five of them.
Yeah.
All right, because my department, you want to talk about an oppressive abuse of power? My boss used to send people for psychological evaluations as a punishment if he didn't like you. So I took five of them. Our favorite doctor, the one they sent us to after our shootings, tried to give me number six, and I said, oh, God. And he's like, what's the matter? And I said, this is the sixth time I've taken this damn test.
I had a ticket.
And he says, well, you can't take it. I invalidated the test because you can only take it so many times in a certain amount of years.
Wow.
So that's how many times I took it. Like, I knew the answers. I knew what I was going to answer. I said, listen, you can test me again. It's going to be the same answers. I like watching porn.
So, who does?
Anyway, I don't know. This is the questions.
Anyway, it was a long process of taking exams. It was probably about 10 years. And
did you ever get discouraged?
Sure. I mean, but it's a long process. I mean, I felt like I was wasting my time. You know, in the state of New Jersey, you need residency. And, you know, after I graduated, I moved to Hoboken. I moved to Hoboken in, I want to say, 07 or 06. It was right around the time the department was facing layoffs and cuts.
Like rice bill stuff?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, this is it. Like, I got zero shot at this. I'm working in the city. I also took a Port Authority exam, written exam, which I was notified I passed. Still didn't hear nothing. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess the ship has sailed. I did the corporate grind in publishing, you know, typical office space type job. Great job. But it was a dead end job. You know, it was developing, editing newsletters, books, and journals. And I started thinking about, what am I going to do next? And I NYU had a program where it's like a continuing education. It's not like it's accredited, but you earn a certificate. And I got in paralegal studies. And I'm thinking, you know what? This job's going nowhere. Police ain't going to work out. It's something that I could fall back on.
You started developing a plan B.
Yeah, precisely. And currently that's where I'm at now. And everything's great. So I eventually get laid off and I get a great severance. I was a good employee. I'm like, you know, at this time, I already met my wife. We've been happily married 10 years. And, you know, she didn't marry a cop. You know, she married somebody that always, you know, she saw someone that accomplished a dream and a goal and became a police officer.
Do you mind if I ask you if you're still married?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're, 10 years.
You're still married, which you've beat the statistic.
Yeah.
So the statistic is, statistically, if you were married before you were a cop, your chances of divorce skyrocket. If you're married after you're a cop, because they know what they're getting. That's because this job changes you. I don't care what anybody says. This job changes you.
Every
part of you.
It changes you, but you progress. You know, you deal with it. You roll with it. You know, I had a few friends who knew me and were like, listen, don't ever change when you take this job. And I didn't. You know, and not to say that I was a good or a bad police officer, I remain the same person. Yes, this job changes you. You get a front row seat to the greatest show on earth.
But it's a strong woman.
Absolutely.
Who can stick that out, because whether you saw it or not, they got to sort of roll with the punches, whether you saw it or not.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I was fortunate enough where the timing was. So going back to my job, I get laid off. That first week of waiting over 10 years of trying to become a police officer, I get the certification from Hoboken, and it's like 12. And I was like, wow, I got a shot here. That same week, I get a letter from Port Authority. Port Authority going back to the FBI, they have very high standards. So going through their background check, it was funny. I had been living in Hoboken for years already. They wanted proof of every traffic summons and every parking ticket you ever gotten paid. It's been, you know, paid off, and a certified copy of it. Everything's got to be certified. I made friends with the guy at the UPS store because I was always there getting shit certified. And I'll never forget going to Hoboken and be like, hi, you know, I'm Matt Isler. And can you do me a favor? Can you print out a copy of every parking ticket I ever got in this town? And we lived on Washington Street. So, I mean, I was constantly getting told. The best one, Mike, was, Mike, you ready for the best one was, because I lived right next to the great establishment, the far side, between 5th and 6th on Washington.
I know where that is.
And I used to park, we used to go out at night. We had one car. I would park it. You know, oh, it's Sunday. I don't got to worry about parking. I woke up one morning and I was like, the fuck are all these people doing out here? It was the arts and music festival. And my fucking car was just like, God. And thankfully back then you just, I walked uptown and I was able to get my car back and eventually sold it and bought my, you know, bought my wife a ring, you know? So like I said, I felt bad for all the people in the academy who had to get married, have children, you know, to deal with such like important milestones in your life and have to, you know, the shave head, sir, yes, sir. And, you know, there was guys, we were joking with one of the guys in the academy. He's like, he was going to wear a toupee. Nothing against the, you know, like, because of the shaved head. So yeah. I'm jumping around.
So you go into the academy for Hoboken. Like, you finally got it.
Who did you get hired with? I don't remember.
Big class. We were originally a class of 10. I'm not going to mention any names, but we were all great.
I remember.
Here comes another interesting thing. I started my career at almost a tipping point in law enforcement in 2013. I started the academy in July of 13, and within a year,
trying to think of what happened.
Within a year that I was on, Detective Melvin Santiago of the Jersey City Police Department was murdered,
ambushed. Yes.
And he started the academy at a similar time I did, and that's when things really started to change. I was a cop for nearly 10 years, 9 years. And that was going to that and seeing something like that as a young officer on the job, it just kind of like,
I had to look his mother in the eye. I'll tell you why, because my old neighbor was his relative. They're all Jersey City people. I had to look her in the eye. She came to the house one day and I knew who she was. And that was tough.
Yeah, rest in peace, Melvin. And my 10 years between that, the opiate pandemic, the opiates, the pandemic, just it was a great time, and it was a fun chapter. And I can sit here and you know, you mentioned abuse of power before, you know, I can blame all the outside figures that happened to me as far as my resignation as a police officer, but at the end of the day, it's myself, and I take responsibility for it.
That's the most important thing. You got to take responsibility for your actions.
And not everyone can do that.
Before we get there, you get this job as a police officer, hit the streets. You wanted to be a police officer for 10 years. You know, you've been taking test after test after test. When you got on, was it what you expected?
No. I mean, it's to a degree, yes. But
see, I'm like you. I was totally ignorant to the job. I have a family member. My great-great-grandfather was a lieutenant in the Philadelphia Police Department. I never met him. I have no idea.
You go in there and you think it's all fast-paced. And
it's really not.
And what's funny, too, is that the public's opinion of what police work is completely off, too.
Correct.
Without a doubt.
You know, and the, you know.
I remember asking this question to a lieutenant going, if I stop a car and I get a PBA card, what do I do? I was ignorant on that, I swear. And he goes, you know, if it wasn't too bad, you sort of give him a little courtesy. And I had to be schooled on every aspect of it. So I was really coming in fresh.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that's where you were too.
Yeah. I was, you know, and my cousin who I mentioned earlier, you know, he's obviously in DC and, you know, we text every once in a while and you know, I'll never forget when, you know, the big thing with Colin Kaepernick and, you know, a lot of times we get held to work. And I remember I worked the 4 to 12 shift. All right, take a walk and patrol the bar scene. And, you know, I remember texting him like, hey, well, you know, what do you think of all this? And he goes, you know, this is what makes this country great. You know, that you can have that opinion and so be it. I mean, everyone's welcome to it. And, you know, and that's the beauty of it. As much as you disagree with anyone's opinion, you're free to, you know, I'm free to have this conversation right now.
I'm free to express your opinions.
I've said that as well. You go to Russia and you speak out against the KGB. Well, you're going to have a problem, or the secret police, whatever the hell it's called now. You're going to have a problem. But in America, that's one of the rights that you're afforded. You can have your opinion. As long as your opinions don't infringe on my personal freedoms, go ahead, have at it.
And I'm always one where, you know, I pride myself in not having a civilian complain about me. And I mean, unfortunately, that that did occur, and I suffered some serious consequences for that.
So, but you had some good calls in there, right? You
absolutely
had some good stuff.
I won a couple awards. Going back to the opiate crisis. I mean, I've seen two people die and come back to life. It's
Narcan?
Yes.
See, I missed Narcan.
I never had it.
I never had it. I knew it was out there, but it was out there for medic use. It wasn't even EMTs had it. Now they all have it in their car. And I was talking to somebody recently because I was interested about the Narcan, and they said, you hit somebody with Narcan, you better be able to hold them down because they're going to be pissed.
I mean, Mike, you just took away their high.
Yep.
Mike, you were around. I mean, we were averaging, I would say, at least one every 2 to 3 days. It was bad.
It was continuous.
Yeah.
And it's
a nasal spray, right?
Yeah.
Well, just the overdose in general. I'm not talking about saves. I'm just talking about just overdose calls. You know,
a lot.
Hoboken is, I want to preface this too. Hoboken is a great town because of its police department. You know, I feel that like the town doesn't feel, you know, has this sense of like, wow, you know, we can always do better type of things. But for what they are and what they do, you know, I'm very proud to say, you know, I was a member of that department.
Have you ever met Nikki Burke?
I mean, he was my supervisor.
So it was
tough because he was on midnights for that's what I remember majority of his career. That's a tough shift.
I'll get back into
the bar scene.
Yeah, so I mean, Hoboken's an interesting animal because you have the bar scene, and I'll never forget my first day on the job. Right, 4 to 12. Here you go, kid. And that police officer took me down to the projects, and you want it by
in a mile square. You don't think, especially modern
now,
day
for
Hoboken.
For me. I lived on Washington Street. I took the bus to the city. I took the path in. The furthest west in town, Mike, was Fiori's to get a sandwich.
Yeah, yeah.
On Adams.
Yeah. Right by Biggie's?
You were close. You were close down there.
Behind Biggie's.
Yeah.
Mike.
Got a Biggie's, make a right.
Make a left. Go behind Biggie's.
It's close. It is
Mike,
close.
I see no Biggie's. Oh, yeah. They tore it down about 4 years ago. I thought you'd know where it was.
You got to go to the other Biggie's on 17.
I will tell you this. The people in Hoboken, through Mike DePalma, that we have met, have been the most genuine, have been the most caring, and they bring you in. We went down to, and this just speaks to the people of Hoboken. We went down to that backyard barbecue where Cooney was, and Stewie was there, and one guy looked like he was a melted candle, and I mean, it was really, really screwed
Matt
up.
Matt probably knows half of them.
But I got to be honest with you, they brought us in, and we were their family. We
were like one of their own.
It was like we'd known them for years.
My grandfather on mother's side, he worked 20 some odd years at Maxwell House. He got out of Hoboken. My mother didn't grow up in town, but I do have roots there. And it's fun. I'll never forget someone in the locker room was like, yeah, you got roots here. Back in freaking when the horse and buggy and like freaking Prohibition days.
Yeah, so some of those guys.
I mean, listen, it was, I'll say it again. It was really a remarkable time to be a police officer as far as, I mean, I didn't even make it a decade, and, you know, just seeing what the department deals with on a daily basis and just society.
Like you said, the general public doesn't know what police go through on a daily basis.
Yeah. My favorite thing is like, I know my rights.
Yeah.
We've all heard it as police officers, and it's just like, yep, it's my duty to protect and serve you.
It wasn't always sunshine and rainbows for you. At some point in your career, stuff started sliding.
Yeah, I mean, it got off to a rough start. I mean, I won't get into the specifics of that, but I was part of a unit that patrolled the housing project, and as a result, it got disbanded. I'm talking 9. Hey, they popped up. But
it looks like young Mike. He's only got two chins in that picture.
Yeah, that's a beautiful picture, dude.
And I know I signed something. I don't want what's going. Anyway,
it's a gorgeous picture.
Anyway,
God, I'd date you. I'm not gay, but I'd date
listen,
you.
Can you come on. Let's go.
I love that picture. It's my favorite picture of you.
You want to put the Mickey Mouse next to it, Mike?
I like the picture with the suit on.
Yeah, that was a good picture. Yeah. Not to deter from what you said, but I just look at that picture. I fall in love.
lose my train of thought.
Dude, I totally lose my train of thought. So you start, stuff starts sliding. Like, what year did you notice things start to change for you in police work?
I always had a chip on my shoulder because I got jammed up right off the jump. Like, you know, within my first 10 days of the job, not 10 days, like 30 days, was assigned a unit that was disbanded. You know, supervisors got 30. The unit that was in it before me got a 20-day suspension. And after it was all said and done, I got a 10-day suspension as part of this group that was accused of, you know, overblown things. I mean, it was very politically involved, I'll say that.
Was there any shred of truth in it?
Very little. Okay. You know, I was brand new. You know, the, you know, phantom.
You were guilty by association.
Yeah. And yeah, pretty much so. Long story short, they shut down that unit and go to Midnights and take a walk by yourself. And that was, I did that for a few months and just kind of sit and ponder about what's going on. They're like, you're not going to talk about it. This is a big investigation, all this nonsense. Long story short, I end up taking a 10-day hit for it. And what's crazy is that there's people who wouldn't even hit the street yet. And here I am, you know, part of this, you know, part of this unit going through this one. And I always had that chip on my shoulder. You know, guys that are involved with that moved on, and it's just part of the job. And, you know, after that experience, you know, my career was great. You know, I worked every shift. I got put on a Parks and Waterfront. I got to ride a bicycle, and people say the funniest shit to you. Like, I'll just bring up this one thing. I'm riding my bike and I'm patrolling, and just this whole time, I just looks at me and goes, they give you a sled for that in the winter? And a lot of times, and you just bite your tongue, and then as I roll off, I'm like, yeah. And know who we pick up? Yeah. You know, who are you?
The worst police injury I ever heard was by a bicycle cop.
Yeah.
So he was driving down, and somebody pulled out in front of him, and he hit the car. Of course, he hits his nuts on the gooseneck, but that wasn't even a big thing.
I went flying.
So he's right going. Yeah. So he's going home, and he starts sweating, and he's just he's not feeling good. He's sweating. So he gets home, finally makes it home, and he's stone white. His wife calls the ambulance. They rush him to the hospital. His testicle, it's called torsion. You know, testicular torsion. He was within, like, you have 4 hours after the event.
Emergency surgery.
Otherwise, you're losing your nut. And he had testicular torsion. He was within like moments of losing his testicle. Now he's got like 5 kids, so successful surgery.
All right.
That's the worst injury I think I've ever heard of any cop. It was awful sounding.
Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate, you know, other than, you know, chasing guys. I mean, I pulled my hamstring, and I mean, I really didn't get severely injured, you know, on the job. You know, had a good stretch, you know, of probably about 4 or 5 years, whatever it was, you know, the birth of my first daughter, she's 5 years old. And I was just blessed. You know, I was able to take some family leave, spend some time with my wife. And, you know, she has a full-time job, and she's my new chief now. She's
so let's bring us to the moment where it starts getting really bad.
Well, I mean, I would say it was a decline. You know, my biggest mistake was, or misstep or misjudgment was, so we have outside employment as police. You know, you get hired by companies to, you know, keep safety on the street. Utility company, in Hoboken, you were able to agree to a 4 or 8 hour job. You literally signed a contract and you performed outside employment as overtime. Now, Jersey City's outside employment got shut down for serious, like,
yeah, serious violations, let's put it that way.
And we were always aware of it. And, you know, it was something that we were aware of. And so anyway, my kid was, you know, a baby at the time. And, you know, I'm going to make some bullshit excuses, but, you know, I was tired. I remember, I'll tell you, I was on days and all these details. I'll never forget getting put to Midnights, and I remember seeing the chief. I'm like, look, I'm really looking forward to, you know, working with these new guys, getting to know them. And, you know, and I did. It's great. You know, it's like first time in my career, it's like, oh, here's a new guy. And, you know, let's show you around. let's do some work. But anyway, I'm working Midnights, got a kid at home. My daughter spent 9 days in the NIC unit. With a heart condition, it was very difficult and traumatic. And so anyway, I go back to work. Everything's great. My daughter didn't need surgery. She just has to see a cardiologist once a year. She's healthy, happy, and I'm very blessed. So I'm on midnight, got the kid at home. I agreed to this 8-hour job. And then, like I mentioned before, you can either do a 4 or 8-hour job. And go to the job, work the night before. Guy's like, all right, we need to shut the street down. We got to do some work. No problem. It's done early. And this was wrong of me. Hey, I agreed to an 8-hour job. I'm good. You want to send me home early? All right, I'll go home. Fuck it. And unfortunately for me, that is wrong. You know, I should have said, hey, pal, I'm getting out of here. Give me my 4 hours and I'll split. And I mean, I later learned that this particular crew jammed up 6 other officers in surrounding towns. And I was going to get indicted, you know, for...
So you only worked 4 hours, but got paid for 8.
Yeah, I worked less than 4. And I'll never forget my lawyer being like, you know, what if he took an 8? Because my thinking at the time was, I'm going home for lunch. That's it. I'm out. Like, I'll never forget him saying, fucking, you want 4, 6, or 8? Listen, pal, this is your job here. Like, I agreed to 8. He puts 6. All right, there's a red flag. All right, this is an 8-hour. You're out the door. You know, the AG was actually, you know, keeping an eye on this shit for good reason. I mean,
the next town over just got all jammed up.
There's a town in Essex County that was notorious for, they would show up on a job. Hey, sign my paper. And then gone.
Well, let's go. Yeah. I mean, they had this case and, you know, I admit to it. It's 100% wrong. And I'll never forget. I was an easy witness, cooperated with it. And I'll never forget the union president being like, look, you're going to get 90 days. And you're going to keep your job. And I'm like, that's incredible. This is going back. This was 2019. This is when everything started. So I was like, I can accept that. Keep my job. All right, cool. You know what? You know, they tried to make it out, falsifying public documents, all this bullshit. And mind you, if I had done that, if I had fucking signed off, oh, give me 4, we'll make this an 8 or a 6, throw me in fucking jail. You know, like, I'll accept that. There was none of that. It was a misjudgment. I was wrong. Cooperated 100%. And
so you got the 90 days.
That's what I thought I was going to get. But then the city came back and said, no, we want to terminate you. And in the discovery, I later found this out that, you know, to read a letter from the chief to corporate counsel or the lawyers in City Hall that described my conduct as criminal in nature. And that, because he went to them with 90 days and the city said, no, terminate this dude. And for the chief to write, you know, what I did was criminal in nature, man.
You know, it's funny you say that, because there's a guy who's a very good guy, never had anything on his jacket. He did the Verizon thing. And I'm going to tell you right now, both of you have done the same thing. You go work 3 hours. They say, here's 8. They sign you out at 8. They go sit in the parking lot, so you're part of their scam.
Yeah, exactly.
They've tightened up, obviously. I mean,
but this happened. This guy happened. The same thing happened to him.
I understand.
He went in, told the truth, said, "Yeah, I did it." Figuring he's going to get suspended from road jobs, take a rip, whatever it was. They ended up firing him.
And I understand that. You know, could I? I survived termination 3 times.
Yeah.
You know, as a result of that, you know, I got to keep my job and I was thankful and I was happy to be back.
What was the charge? Or what, not the charge, what was the suspension finally?
I don't remember the terminology, but
No. How many days did you get?
90. I ended up fighting it. Like, after getting that letter, like termination, you know, you're put on modified duty, right? You know, rubber gun, whatever. But yeah, I had to sweat that out. You know, just sitting there in communications, like, all right, well, the hammer's going to drop. Yeah, here I am helping out. And thankfully, you know, I was able to keep my job, you know, because up until then, I cooperated with the investigation, I was.
See, I have a problem with that. I have a problem with that because when a criminal comes in, we arrest somebody, and if they give us the information we're looking for, we usually go easy on them. Right?
Yeah, without doubt.
With police, it's a little bit different. Like,
is it because you're held to a higher standard?
Well, no. So, so you've been in IAs before where, you know, tell me what happened and we'll go easy on you. If you don't tell us what happened, we're going to go after you.
We're going to hammer you.
We're going to hammer you. So you, if you did something wrong, you owned up to it and you took an easier rip, whatever it was. With incidents just like yours where you cooperate. And the same one I just told you about, guy cooperated. Well, what's the value of telling the truth? I might as well fight it and well, do that anyway.
You know, I was grateful to come back. You know, they were willing to give me a second chance. And, you know, I requested a meet with the chief and we had a good conversation when I came back. And, you know, I went back to work. My second incident, I mean, as part of that, you signed what it's called the last chance agreement. Meaning, my lawyer is saying it's like, if, you know, they're not going to fire if you're not wearing your hat.
But like if you don't pass an inspection, they want to do a random basically inspection.
You're on probation again.
You step on your dick in order to get fired.
And, you don't tie your shoes right. Take it easy.
And I'll get some Hoboken speak. I was bumpy.
Could you look that one up,
Mike? Yeah.
Bumpy.
You got that Hoboken dictionary back there.
You know,
I forgot about
I'm going to bring the other picture up unless you tell me what that means.
I'll tell you, it's some, so state police has the outfit, you know, sharp, like a, dressed like
a bumpy.
A bumpy is the
opposite. You can't describe a word when it's a word.
A bumpy, like a bumpy.
A bumpy is the opposite of that.
Like unsquared away.
Like a phlebotomist. Bumpy.
Bumpy.
Like unsquared away, you know, like ate up.
You know how long it took me to figure out what comp was? Short for companion. Anyway,
so you signed this
last compadre.
Yeah,
you signed this last chance agreement.
Great, I got my job back. All right,
because right now you're trying to hold on to your job with your fingertips.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, I mean it's still something that you know is you know as shitty as the start of my career was. You know, I still wanted to do the job and prove myself that look, all right, I'll get through this year as a last chance agreement. That was stressful. You know, in the academy, they call it target for dismissal. And I couldn't help but feel that way.
So how long do you stay on that last chance agreement, the remainder of your career?
Well, no. I survived it. I signed a year last chance agreement.
There's a term. Okay. Yeah. That's what I'm wondering.
Last chance agreement, it's a year. And when I come back, I'm back on midnights. Never forget one lieutenant being like, Matt, you know, I appreciate you're really picking up your leadership. You're doing a great job, this and that. You know, that lasted for a few months. And unfortunately for me, towards the tail end of that, I got into an incident where a civilian complained about me and rightfully so. It was a shit show of a job. She, was involving two females that lived in the same building, a small building, a couple blocks, like 2 blocks away from police headquarters. And, we didn't get called to the job. I mean, this is the type of thing where it was like, all right, fire alarm is off. Someone's screaming. You know, send a couple cars. And me and my partner at the time, and it was someone I went to the academy with, were like, I remember looking at him and be like, we got to go to this. You know, like, what the? Like, so we go. This emotionally disturbed female just was MFing everybody. You know, just little did I know that she'd already played the game where she was, incapacitated and take it into protective custody, which means if you're a danger to yourself or others, you go to the hospital, like no question about it. And she had already been down that path with our department. And, for whatever reason, I listened, you know, I was taught, all right. You were abusive, domestic violence. That's why you hit the fire alarm. Okay. You know, calm her down a little bit. You know, the EMTs come. She settles down. She's played the game before. All right, I got this complaint. I'm going to try to throw something on paper. It's getting towards the end of my shift. But so in the building, she had an ongoing issue with another resident, this female who lived near where the fire alarm was. Apparently, they have had some history. So I go back to headquarters. Let me type up this thing for this female. You know, what the fuck just happened? You know, type of job. And I'll never forget when, you know, policing changed for, you know, for the good when these cameras came out, right? And this is, body cameras were in effect. This was probably 2020. I think it happened July of 2020. It's around that time. You know, when that policy first came out, they didn't allow patrolmen to review their footage. And to me, you know, someone that, you know, I took the police exam, like study prep exams to become a sergeant. And I'm like, that's like a trap. Like, why wouldn't they want you to have accurate reports? Like, why can't you just, and now they do, obviously they, you know, law is progress and this job is continually progressing and going forward. Now you're able to review that footage.
So this whole thing was caught on video.
Yes. You know, and
so at the end of your shift, nobody gets arrested or anything like that.
Well,
you go back to headquarters.
So what happens is I go to take the report. The roommate comes walking to headquarters saying, hey, I got a nut job here and I got to talk to someone about this female. Like, I have a history. Okay. I'm like, oh, she's back. Okay. And I go talk to her. She goes, she got all her stuff. She's looking to get away from this woman who I thought just called it a night and that's it.
Was it a romantic relationship?
No. It's just two people living in the same building.
Okay.
No. And so maybe in the nice guy that I am or stupidly, I say, all right, you know what? It's right here. And I didn't call it in. I'll go walk and get your license real quick. I'm thinking this lady is knocked out, passed out, nothing to worry about. Unfortunately for me and her, the lunatic comes back out. And she, you know, was under excited delirium. She was freaking out. I want this woman, this poor woman. She's like, I want her arrested. You know, what the, tell me her name, this and that. Grab some shit out of her bag. You know, I grab her, like, and she's holding the phone. And she goes, I'm going to smash this phone. Like, if you don't tell me her name, I'll screaming all this nonsense. Mind you, it's like 7:30 in the morning. There's people like walking to work and shit. Like, it's like, you know, it's daylight now than I was worked the night before. You know, I take the cuffs out. I go, listen, you're getting booked if you don't give me the phone back. You know, I call another car. By the time the car comes, she snaps out of it, gives me the phone back. Walk this poor, and then the cop, I'll never forget, they roll up. We good? Yeah, we're good. Fuck it. You know, get the fuck out of here. I didn't say that, obviously, but yeah, we're good. Walk this woman back to headquarters. And my thinking is like, all right, I'm going to do the report based on the shit show that I'd observed overnight. She's going to come in and talk about what just occurred with me. And obviously there's things as a use of force report. I said I wrestled with this woman and it wasn't a wrestling match. Yeah, we got a little hands on, got the property back. And this female obviously had a complaint against me and rightfully so. And I ended up, long story short, you know, I witnessed the robbery, even though I returned the property. I ended up serving 180-day suspension for that, half a year. And I survived, though. I kept my job. Somehow. Don't ask me how. I survived two last chance agreements and I was able to come back to work.
So what was the final straw?
I got in trouble again. I came back.
Wow, I don't really feel bad anymore, man. Thanks for coming on.
So anyway, don't ask me how, but like my lawyer was sitting there like, it was a 2-hour process of getting interrogated about this job. You know, you got to go to the videotape and watch it. Like, oh, shit.
After the second job or the third time you got in trouble?
No, I'm talking about this past time with the fire alarm, this job I'm talking about. Like, yeah.
What was the third one that got you in trouble?
The third one was a business owner complained that he saw someone smoking crack in front of his business, wanted this guy booked. I could smell it. Again, towards the end of my shift, I go, all right, it's this guy here. And he's kind of like walking off. He's not acting disorderly. He keeps walking and that was it. I ended my shift. Like, all right, he's sent on way. I don't see any signs of, you know, yeah, he was a little messed up. I could have handled that job more. He ended up, turns out the guy had warrants and he was picked up by the next shift. And, you know, that happens sometimes in law enforcement where you deal with someone that the last shift dealt with and you handle it. You know, this was within a couple of weeks after I came back from my 180-day vacation. And I'll never forget. I get along with everybody, you know, and a guy observed it, who's walking to work. You know, the next shift books him. He was upset about something else that occurred that was going on at the department. But he went in front of the police desk and went into the restroom. He was in headquarters doing some training. Hey, I just saw Isler out with this guy. Oh, a lieutenant. Huh. Someone. Huh. Who? Videotape. Yep. Me. Guilty as charged. Okay. So I was able to work. I mean, I knew. It's funny. So both times I survived termination, I fought it. I wanted to come back. This one, I was like, I'm not going to really get the union or any type of legal representation involved. I got nothing left to fight for. It is what it is. I think coming back.
Did you get a heads up and say, hey, listen, this one's not really fightable? Or?
Well, no. I mean, I was on my second last chance agreement.
Hmm.
I lost motivation. You know, I had a good run. You know, they interviewed me on that one. And it was interesting because the first time I got jammed up, modified duty, you're in police headquarters. Okay, take your hit, come back. When the second incident happened, you know, get the knock on the door. Oh, hey, sergeants, what's up? Hey, gotta take your gun, pal. They were very cool. Listen, you got a good attorney. You'll be all right. Thanks, dudes. and I survived that one. But this one, I was the end of my rope. You know, it's unfortunate. You know, I was very upset with that officer who's now a sergeant. And, you know, I eventually, you know, I'll never forget. And then I did the interview. I'm like, all right, well, maybe I'll get a pass again. You know, I'm like, maybe I got 9 lives. You know, we'll see. But that was strike 3 for me. You know, I worked one more overtime on New Year's Eve. And I remember it was like my 6th day in a row in, so I took a vacation day. Dead during the week shift. Come in, they call me in at 7 in the morning. Our PBA vice president's waiting there, and that's it. They're like, Matt, we're going to make an offer you can't refuse. And originally, I was like, are you kidding me? I'm like, time out. And like Mark, our president was there. I'm like, time out. I need to go and confirm this with Mark. I was obviously angry. But after talking to Mark, you know, the department didn't have to give me that offer. You know,
what did they tell you? Either resign or you're going to get terminated?
Yeah. And you know what? Respectfully, I did the honorable thing, like they say in the academy, and you go home. And that, you know, that was a tough pill, but, you know, I'll never forget, you know, going home that morning, and it was just like the regular routine at home. We had a baby, and I'd take my kid to daycare. And I'm like, maybe I'll just sleep and fucking just pretend to go to work the next night and like just not tell my wife. And having that conversation with her, it was difficult. And she's been, this has been over a year ago, and death to us part, because, you know, this woman was just like, she goes, I knew when they made you sign a 2-year last chance agreement, you were going to survive. And
it's like you're walking a plank. You're just it's tiptoeing to the end.
It's, you know.
Well, isn't that a police career? You know, you get to a certain point in your police career, you are walking that plank.
Oh, yeah.
I agree.
You know, and you one deviation off of that plank, you're falling in the drink.
Unfortunately, you know, in the corporate world, it's called a golden parachute. And once you're 25, you can hit that button whenever you like. I'll go back to resign. You're a good guy. You're not going to have a problem getting another job. And I went like a whole year of taking interviews.
With other police departments.
Other police departments. Because like my hometown of Hasbrook Heights, I can go to any chief's town and apply. And there's a lot of people hiring now, obviously. There's a lot of turnover going on in the job. And quite frankly, they don't have the demand of applicants. And I went over about a dozen interviews. Half of them were just horrible. And I love the ones that start off. They're like, hey, Matt, so you got a lot of baggage. Let's talk about it.
Whoops.
And here I am. And that's the beauty of it. Here I am. Here it is.
Are you still actively looking?
After a year, I decided, you know what? I came very close, you know, to one department. The number on the application is 35. They want someone 35 or younger with less than 5 years experience.
Yeah, because they're worried about paying you too much. Yeah.
Well, and that, and I've already been corrupted.
I was going to say, you could mold a younger person.
And, yeah. And I'm okay. Let someone else have a chance.
A grizzled vet isn't going to be molded.
Let someone else have a chance. I mean, I have technically 3 years, I think. And I'm
Yeah, then you lose your PTC.
So, yeah.
Yeah, but with all this new licensing, and everyone's all concerned about that. And
it may be a blessing in disguise for you, because there might be that might be your path that you have to walk in order to get to where you're supposed to be.
The chapter's closed. Like, you know, I'm no longer actively pursuing. I went on plenty of interviews, like I said, and I realized that it's time to move on.
So we're coming to the end of this thing. Anything you want to plug? Anything you want to throw out? You want to throw out your social media? Throw out anything?
I'm good. Like, I just appreciate coming out here. I have nothing to promote. I just...
Well, I appreciate you owning up to it and being honest with us.
Yeah,
I
mean, well, you know what? He's wearing a torch run, so...
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I miss running this every year. I mean, the police just do a tremendous job with that organization.
Mike's a real big part of that.
Yeah, I'm on the torch run committee.
Yeah.
It's a great organization.
Ultra...
You know, like,
feminine video of you running down there with the torch. I remember that.
You're just jealous.
I am.
The way you see Matt today, this is how he was as an officer. Yeah. He was just mellow. He was just cool, calm, very, very, you know, he was respected.
It's funny that my 92-year-old grandmother told me, she's like, Matt, you're too nice to be a police officer. I said, no, I'm not. You got to, there's an element to that in police work, and, you know, I'll be all right.
Well, luckily, you know what? Here's the positive side for it. You got out before the job really jaded you, because if you are, you know, listen, I just met you tonight. So if you really are that nice of a guy, and I believe this guy with everything in my being, if he says you're a nice guy, maybe it was for the best that you got out before this job really hardened you, because eventually that happens to every one of us.
Yeah, I mean,
especially now if you have a chip on your shoulder when you're working, now you can't have a chip on your shoulder.
Like I said, constantly evolving, and you know. Progress takes time. I mean, you look at different laws and they evolve for a reason, you know. Yeah. So it is what it is. And, you know, I'll say it again. Like, it was a great time working there. And that cop that I told you that went to the department, hey, I just saw him. I went to the Christmas party. I gave the dude a hug, saluted him on his, I congratulated him on his promotion. And that's it. It's just strictly business, and that's it. Nothing personal.
So, like I said, we're coming to the end of this thing here. You had this long this career in law enforcement that got cut short. You wanted to be a cop for so long, and then you have to experience getting the job, but you also have to experience losing the job. And you've gone through an enormous amount of suffering to you and your family, but it had to teach you something. So, what do you think it taught you?
It just taught me patience and just to slow down, really care about your loved ones. I got two beautiful daughters at home, and I'm just truly blessed. And that's, at the end of the day, that's all that matters. You know, because when I was going through, you know, all the nonsense, I was a short fuse burning. And that's not a way to treat people. And, you know, I want to move forward, but you can't keep looking at the past. You know, and that's the way I look at things.
You got to learn from it.
Yep, exactly.
Well, Matt, I appreciate you coming in. Mike, listen. You're always the man.
It was an honor. It was great.
You're always the man.
Support my fellow Hoboken guy here.
He's most quiet he's been in 75 episodes he's been here.
I know. It's not about me. But he doesn't have the accent. I got to start teaching him about that.
I'm surprised you didn't pick that one up. I started picking it up the other day. I was like, can I get a glass of water? Matt, thank you so much for coming.
Thanks,
man. Appreciate it.
That was
cool.
And that's going to do it for this episode of the Suffering Podcast, The Suffering of Resignation with Matt Isler. And let's think about all the stuff that we learned. Discouraging attitude can change in a single moment. Hoboken people are the most genuine. Being tired can cause bad decisions. Sometimes the honorable thing really hurts, but most importantly, have patience, because it's gold. And that's going to do it for this episode. Don't forget to go to popple.com, put in the code TSP20 for 20% off your digital business card. Follow us on all social media. That's Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn, Twitter, Clapper.
RedTube.
RedTube. XNXX. Follow Mike at Mike_Fillets. Follow me at Real Kevin Donaldson. And, of course, follow the Suffering Podcast. We'll see you on the next episode.